Good afternoon, family. My name is Marcy, and I'm an addict. And it is truly a blessing that I'm standing here before you today, but through the grace of God. I'm very, very nervous. I've been nervous. I kind of got nervous starting about 2 hours ago. I was okay the whole time. Then 2 hours ago, I started praying. Every time I went to the bathroom, I would look in the mirror and I would say, God, speak through me. So hopefully I can help at least one person in this room today. Not using the steps is the topic of this meeting. And my sponsor actually called me and said to me, I need for you to do a workshop at the convention this year. And I said to her, sure, I'd love to. At first she told me one that I was going to do, and I said to her, I can't speak on that step. I haven't even done that step yet. And then she said, well, I have a choice for you. You can choose from these. And then she brought up this one, not using the steps, and I said, oh, that's perfect. Because I am famous for procrastinating when it came to, one, doing the steps, and two, using the steps. I have probably within... I got here April 23rd, 1993. I actually got here through God's will. I was arrested April 23rd, 1993. And God sat me down for 2 years.
Yeah.
2 years. So actually, my clean time started while I was in jail. While I was sitting in jail, watching the same women go in and out of jail, come in for 3 months, get some meat on their butt, leave again, come back again in a couple of months. And I saw that going on the whole 2 years that I was in jail. I'm from the Northern Virginia area. I was doing the Beltway jails. I was actually doing the Beltway. I had detainers and I had things, and they were going to make sure that I took care of every last one of those. This is part of my story I need to tell you. I need to free myself. While I was in jail, I did go to meetings once in a while, when I felt like it, just to get out of my pod, just to get out of the cell. Didn't matter to me. I did know one thing, though, while I was in jail. I know that I was not practicing recovery because I had no clue what recovery was. What I did know was that I never wanted to go back to jail. That's what I did know. So needless to say, when I stepped out of jail April 11th, 1995, and I went straight to treatment, because that's what the judge had given me, I was very willing and very open, and I was probably the most grateful person to step on to the grounds of a treatment center. And I say that to you because anything for me would have been better than jail. I was very angry at myself for a very long time because I had put myself in a predicament that I ended up hitting my very bottom. For me, jail was bottom. I don't know if it has been for y'all, but for me, it was it. And the reason I say that is because there was many a night when I cried in my bed in that jail on that stone, on that stone cold platform with that thin mattress and just cried into my pillow, wondering what my family was doing, wondering what my loved ones were doing. I just knew I didn't want to do this anymore. I knew I didn't want to do that. So I knew that when I got out of jail and I went into treatment, I had to do something different. They taught me in treatment that I had to be open, honest, and willing. And I had to try to do them all at the same time. For me, that was like juggling balls, and I'll be damned if I'm a clown. I don't know how to do that. But I do know that the willingness was there from the very beginning. And I also knew when I went into treatment that there was a commitment that I needed to make, and it was to myself. It was a commitment that no matter what, and no matter how bad it got, and no matter how painful or how stressful, that no matter what, I would not use. That was the first commitment that I needed to make to self. Once I got through treatment, I got my first sponsor while I was in treatment. Now, I've been through about four sponsors. And I did the 1-2-3 with my sponsors. 1-2-3, get rid of that sponsor. 1-2-3, get rid of that sponsor. 1-2-3, get rid of that sponsor. Because they were ready to put me on step four. Okay. And I was not willing to do step four because I didn't want to get to know me with all my good, bad, ugly, and indifferent. But what I did was I finally ended up meeting a woman who is my sponsor today, who has been my sponsor for a few years, that kind of, I guess I should say, she led me through example. My sponsor is in constant service work, constant. There is never a year that I don't hear this woman talking about some convention or something. She's always in something. And she told me that I needed to do the steps at my own pace when I was ready. But she also said, you do need to do them. And you do need to work them, and you do need to use them on a daily basis. I finally ended up doing that fourth step. And that fourth step was the one that opened up kind of the using of the steps for me. It took me 3 months to write everything down. And I do say write everything down because it probably ended up like we were together for like 6 or 7 hours, me finally letting go in my fifth step and letting her know everything that I didn't want anybody else to know but her. I finally realized that a lot of the turmoil that I have brought to myself in recovery has been by not using the steps. One of the things is trying to control other people. By not using the steps, I have found myself angry and beating myself up over things that have absolutely nothing to do with me. Nothing to do with me. And things that only God can control. And I actually had to sit down with self and just, you know, say, hey, this is not me. This is not about me. This is about them, and why am I carrying their stuff? Perfect example is I married a man about 4 years ago in recovery. We were both in recovery. And I'm not going to break his anonymity. I'm not going to tell you his name. But I am going to tell you that after, on his 7th anniversary, he decided he wanted to become a social drinker again. I was devastated. I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. I didn't know. I felt like I was drinking all over again because he came into my safe little world while it was safe, and he made it an unsafe place for me. That's how I felt. We had to sit down with the pastor, and the pastor finally said the things that I couldn't say. And basically he said to him, she doesn't know what to expect from you because she doesn't know the using addict, which is true. See, most of my life while I was using, I was with men who used to beat me and use me and abuse me verbally. And that's the kind of relationship that I was used to. And not having that kind of relationship and marrying a man who was in recovery and actually feeling that I was being loved and honored and all of that kind of stuff, I felt that all of that was on the brinks. I had to put my step work to use. I actually had to realize that whatever he chose to do was his choice and not my choice, and that I didn't have to follow his path. Don't get me wrong, I love my husband dearly. I would do anything for my husband. But I will not allow him to step over the boundaries that I have made for myself. And that's not the only turmoil that I've brought into my life by not using the steps. I have allowed things that people have said to hurt my feelings because of me not using the steps. Instead of being open-minded, I had a girlfriend a few years back when I was first in recovery who told me, you are just a dressed-up garbage can. Just like that. And I was offended. I didn't hear the message. I looked at the messenger, and I totally X'd her out of my life. Because I did not want to hear that I was a dressed up garbage can. She told me, "You're a beautiful woman, but you're not working on anything." That hurt so bad. Oh, God, I was devastated. Didn't want to talk to this girl. Didn't talk to her for a long time. I had to put step work to use there. Listen to the message. What is it that I'm not doing? Why is it that the women that love me, that I want to have this bond with, are looking at me like a dressed up garbage can? What is it that I'm doing, or what is it that I'm not doing, that they're looking at me this way? Basically, what I wasn't doing is I wasn't doing anything. I was just basically sitting in this program looking pretty, giving myself a bad name in the rooms, jumping from man to man, doing things that I wasn't supposed to be doing, not listening to the message. I can go on and on and on about the different turmoil that not using the steps can get us into, or get me into, excuse me, because I'm speaking for self. All I know is that my life has truly changed since I've been in recovery. Now, my recovery started the day I left jail and went into treatment, because that's when I started learning what recovery was really about. And what I had to, basically the expectations that I had on myself and the expectations that I had for this program. But you know what? This program will only be what I put into it for me. I realize that if I don't do service work and I don't give to this program, I don't get anything out of it. I get absolutely nothing, you know. You only get into it, you only get out of it what you put into it. That's the truth. In this program, I also learned that helping another suffering addict is probably one of my favorite steps. And I use that step a lot now. And the reason that I tell you that is because those same jails, that same beltway turn that I was doing, I'm actually doing it by taking meetings back to the females in the jails. I said when I left that jail, when I left every last jail that I was in, if I come back, it'll be by choice. Not because I wrote a bad check, not because I used girlfriend's credit card, not because of anything else, but by choice. So when I started to do my service work again, after I got off paper, after I had been on the same, I've been on the same job for a while, I finally started to do the paperwork so that I can get into the jails and help other women. And it has been one of the most fulfilling things I have ever done in my life. Because those women who are in jail are yearning. They are waiting. They are so happy to see a recovering addict come in there and try to give them some help. And I know that, you know, for a long time it was like, how can I do this? How can I go back in here? How can I use this, you know, this step? How can I help another recovering addict? How? It's simple. Just tell your story. The women that I go speak to on a weekly basis in the jails have been through the same thing that I've been through. You know, they've stomped on the same streets. You know, they've done the same things. They've stooped to the same lows. They've reached the same highs. All the same things. The only thing is that they haven't decided what they truly want to do yet. You know, my decision is made. This is where I want to be. I want to be in recovery. I want to be able to enjoy life on life's terms. I want to be able to enjoy life. The speaker who spoke last night at the main meeting said it. This is about enjoying life. Sober, clean, no more worrying, no more reaching for the pipe in the morning, no more shaking, no more nothing, no more having to lay down with men I don't know, no more any of that. You know, most of my using was in New York City. And in New York City, you can't walk to the corner without being offered something. It doesn't matter what corner. You could be Fifth Avenue, Fifth Street, Fifth Way, Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island, Manhattan, doesn't matter. You walk down the street, somebody's going to offer you something. You know? And for a long time, I didn't want to go back to New York because I was afraid to hit those streets again. But I knew that I had to go back and face my family. I had to do some actual healing and mending of some bridges that I had definitely burned down. But you know, finally I went back to New York. Yes, I have survived New York quite a number of times in my 8 years of recovery now. Every time I go back, I'm grateful to come back to where I live now. There's still a lot of things going on in New York City that I have no business being there for. But I have mended the bridges with my family. And that's some of the most important things that I have done in recovery. And I could have tried to say I'm sorry to my mother a million times, and I promise, and I promise, and I promise, Mom, but that didn't work. The only thing that has worked with my mother is action. This is an action program. She told me in Spanish, show me. My mother's Puerto Rican. I'm Puerto Rican. She told me in Spanish, show me. She said, enséñame. And I, one day at a time, have showed her that this is what I want to do. My family also doesn't understand the concept of recovery. They understand nothing about this program and what it means. And they still don't understand why I can't sit down and have a beer or why I can't sit down and have a drink with them. And I keep trying to tell them that if I do, halfway through that beer, I'm going to be on the corner getting some crack from the crack man. Because that's where my drinking takes me. It says it in the literature. Alcohol is a drug. And for me, that's my way out. If I take a taste of it and it goes down this throat, pass me the pipe. You might as well. You might as well just and pass me the pipe because that's where I'm going to go. Because there, everything will be thrown out the window. All I need is a way out. All I need is a back door. You know? Speaking of back doors, that's another thing that I had to learn about in this program. I had to let go of those things that would have been my back door. When I was in treatment, and I was still a very sick puppy, I'm still a very sick puppy, but while I was an even sicker puppy, there was a man that I was using in New York City that used to send me clothes and money and bottles of perfume, and I was looking good in treatment, and you know, and I was promising him that as soon as I got out of treatment, I was coming back to New York. Oh, yes, Daddy, I'm coming back to New York. I'm coming back to New York. I had no intention of going back to New York. No intentions. I didn't know what my intentions were. All I knew is that I was not going back to him, but I was using him. And every time I told this to somebody, you know what they would say to me? That's your back door. That's your way right back to the crack house, and you don't even realize it. You know? All you're doing is you are stringing this man along, and you are having him send you stuff for your own selfish reasons, for your own old ways. And I had to look at that. I actually had to look at that. See, my whole life has been like that. My whole life has been about using people. You know, I wasn't the only one being used. I was using people. If you couldn't give me anything, I had wanted nothing to do with you. Women were an obstruction to me. You took my man. You took my next hit. You took my, you know, I mean, it just, I had no use for you. I had no use for women in my life. And every time that I did try to trust a woman while I was using, she would end up stabbing me in the back anyway. You know? Recovery is a wonderful thing. God is good, I tell you that, because the friendships that I have with women today in recovery. Women to my left, there are some women in this room. I mean, just, I couldn't even tell you the feeling that I feel when I'm around these women and they love me with all of my faults. Whether I use the steps or not, whether I am in recovery mode or relapse, they love me unconditionally. For me, that is a feeling that I can't even put a name on. But I'll tell you what, these women have set examples for me. They have set examples for me in this program, and they have showed me that I can make this an easy path or I can make this a rough path. The easy path is to go to meetings, follow suggestions, follow direction, pray, work my steps, help another suffering addict, keep women in my life. It's real simple. Or I could be a hardhead, knucklehead, like my husband calls me sometimes. I could be a knucklehead, and I could try to go around that, and I could try to laugh and, you know, make believe that I'm happy all the time when I'm really not, when I'm really hurting on the inside. I could try not to get any help. I could try a whole lot of things. You know, I could stand up here again. I'll say it again. I could stand up here for another 35, 40 minutes and tell you all about, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly of me. But I won't, because this man next to me has to speak too. He's trying to get out of this. I don't know if I have touched enough on not using the steps or not, but all I can tell you is that I'm living proof that if you don't use the steps and don't work the steps, life will become turmoil. You know, you could be in this program for the rest of your life and be in turmoil. You know, you can be in this program and you know, make the best of it. You know, try to let things go. Listen to the message. Guy across the hall a little while ago was talking about player haters. You know? He was talking about player haters, meaning, gee, homegirl got a nicer outfit than I do. Homegirl's man is nicer looking than mine is. Homegirl is about 30 pounds lighter than me, so she looked better than me. I struggle with that one. I do struggle with it. I went from being a size 3 to being a size 16. But that's okay, because I'm a proud 16. He hands me a card, personal training. I got some help, right? All you got to do is ask for some help in these rooms and you go get it. It's about asking for help. It's about, you know, actually, if you think about it, I know that I've thought about it a million times. Using the steps is about using the people in these rooms and listening to the message and learning from their experiences and learning that if you do the same things, you're going to get the same things, whether it be good things, bad things, you know. I know people who come into this fellowship and decide once they get here, they've never done anything bad by the law, but yet they come into recovery because they've been on drugs and alcohol all their lives, and all of a sudden they come in here and they decide once they're clean that they want to start writing bad checks. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me why once we're clean and sober, we decide that we want to try to be sneaky. You know what I mean? It just, that's not using your head. Never you mind the steps. You know, I don't know. I enjoy my freedom. Them 2 years that I was down taught me that I am a better woman than I ever thought I could be. That I deserve better. That I am better. You know, that I am a woman of substance, that I am a woman who should hold my head up high all the time. that I have nothing to be ashamed of, that what I did because I have a disease that takes over me. I love this program, and I love everything that it's done for me. That treatment center that I went to, God bless the ground that that place is on. I'll tell you right now, for the newcomer in here, if you don't know what it is to use the steps, get with a sponsor and find out what it's like. Because it will free you. It will make you feel free. It will let things go from your insides that you never thought you'd be able to share with anybody. And once it's out, it's out. And that's that. And it's over. And you never have to share that again if you don't want to. This is about choice. This program is about choices. You know. Especially to the women in here. Please, women. Let's not hate each other. This program is not about hating each other. This is about helping somebody. If any of y'all have ever been in jail and you know what it is to be there and feel helpless and hopeless, find some service work up in jail. Them women are going to love you for it. In fact, I saw a couple of the women that I have spoken to in the jail here today. One of the things that I say when I walk into the jail is, I hope that this message will help at least one of you not to come back. Because, of course, when they tell you in treatment, only one of you will stay clean. They mean it. They ain't joking. From the community that I was in treatment, I am the only female left. I am the only one left. Myself and another male that I know is still clean and sober. You know, so it's truth. When they tell you one out of 35, they mean it. They mean it. So again, for those women who have been down, help the women that are down. And if you don't want to go up in the jails, then pull up on a newcomer woman, women. Not like Miss, not like the lady last night. Don't go and become a pedophile. Leave them young boys alone. Help another suffering addict. That's the bottom line. That is the bottom line. On Monday, 2 days away, I'm 2 days shy of 8 years. And if you ask me how I did it, I'm going to tell you one day at a time. Thanks for letting me share.
That's Marcy. I love her so much.
Thank you, Marcy. Now for our second speaker, I'd like to introduce Forrest.
Good afternoon, family. My name is Varus, and I'm an addict. And it's truly by God's grace that I stand here. And when I think about my story and I listen to, like, Marcy's story, and I look over all the stories and all the meetings that I've attended, and as I absorb and feel what other people have been through, I realize it's not just God's grace, it's amazing grace. It's why we all are here. And it's truly a pleasure to be here. I was kind of coerced into this, too. I stayed around the rooms. I've been around since 1993, May 29th. And for the first 4 years, I didn't share or raise my hand. Matter of fact, I didn't even see the steps on the wall. But I did attend meetings every day. I did have a sponsor. I did pray. Y'all told me to find a God and find one now. Actually, I found God before I found my sponsor. And that's probably what sustained me throughout the 4 years of being isolated to myself, not allowing anyone to get to know me. Because my mission was to stop using. And The second part was is to get back all the things that I lost. And I accomplished that, right, in the first couple of years. And then I realized that that was just the crumbs of the program. You know, and I'm a good crackhead. You cannot put some crumbs over here and a working 50 and I not go for the working 50. Right. So I'm here to say that I haven't worked a lot of steps. I have tampered with them. Right. And what the steps are, what happened is that the crumbs is good enough to keep you clean. Right. It'll get you by. But if you're like me, why accept the crumbs when you can have a slice of the cake? Then why accept the slice of the cake when you can have the whole cake? Because if you're going to give it back, you need a cake to share it with. And that's where I'm at. And the thing about it is that I tried a few methods, or my family, I should say, tried a few methods. I come from a family of four. I'm the only addict in the family. My mother, father, sisters, brother, none of them drank or smoked, even cigarettes. So I adopted this habit outside of the family, upbringing, right? And I came up here like I came to D.C. like when I was 6 years old. And the good guys down there called me a bama. I ain't like that. I know it was something bad, right? I knew it was something bad, so I asked them, what do I have to do not to be a Bama? And they said, hang with us. And I hung with them, and that's why I'm standing here today. They taught me some things that I had yet to learn. And since being here, I will address the fact that I have looked into the steps enough to know to look into Webster's Dictionary and look up a Bama. Now, I'm from D.C., and D.C. version of Obama is when you don't dress according to their scenario. Now, Webster's Dictionary says a well-dressed individual. So I'm both of them. again, I'm going to say that the only thing that I can really wholeheartedly and honestly say that I've practiced about the steps is not using. Everything else, I use it like I'm an addict. I go to the doctor if I need some Tylenol number 3. Usually when they give them to me, it has something on the prescription that says, use as needed. That's how I apply the steps. I'm not going to take you after this meeting and try to take and quote every step to you when you just ask, could we have dinner together? I'm not a test book man, actually. I'm an experienced one. And I try to share my experience, strength, and hope. Coming from a family of four and none of them using, they tried a whole lot of methods before coming to Narcotics Anonymous to help me get help. And I can recall one of them was taking me to a high priest, right? And it's funny. They took me to a high priest and, you know, he chanted and he burned some candles with my name on it and all that kind of stuff. Then they took me to a Chinese guy and they laid me on a table and stuck pins all throughout my body. Then he took me to a Baptist preacher and he baptized me, damn near drowned me. I think he was trying to kill me. I think he had told my mother, he had looked at me and maybe the spirit had told him, say, just drown him, that'll be the best thing for him, right? Then I talked to one of the mother of the church, and she put her hands on me and spoke in tongues, right? And none of that shit worked. I only went through that process so that I could would be eligible for a $10 bill from my family afterwards. You know, at least a $10 bill. After I done went through getting stuck, damn near drowned, you understand? Rubbed on by some old lady that smelled like mothballs. I'm just saying that to the extreme I went at the very end to try to be a good addict. I tried every method possible to stay out there. And I came in, like I said, May 29th, 1993. And I haven't found it necessary since then, because somebody told me when I got here, they say it's a simple program. They told me to stay out the steps. They told me do step number one. They said you can't get nothing right without that one. And I kind of took that and ran with it, right? Then they told me, listen, I'm telling you, step number one will get you all that stuff back you lost. The other 11 is what's going to help you keep it. All I did was not use. I got back all the things that I lost. And listen to this here. I got back some things that wasn't even on my list that I wanted. You know, and I knew that I wasn't doing any step work when I started to attract some people that I couldn't get rid of when I wanted to. I'm sure nobody else has experienced this, right? You know how you meet, or I'll just say, put it this way, you meet another individual, you say they fine, and y'all date or whatever, and then you realize that oil don't mix with water. And you try to separate it, and they ain't going nowhere. It's like fatal attraction, right? And what have led me to the steps is the pain has outweighed the pleasure. I love to take the elevator and the escalator or use a microwave. But when the pain get great enough, the only way I can find a solution is through the steps. It's an action program, because the steps requires action. And like I said, I've dibbled and dabbled with them. My thing is not to try to quote each step one-on-one, but to apply it to my life and live it. You can do the steps or you can live the steps. Now, I can write all that down and you know, I can even go on the internet and do some step work. They don't went public with it like that. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't replace a meeting or another addict like we are in here today. The things about step work that I don't like, is once you read and become, your awareness level is at the point where you understand what you're doing is wrong and you continue anyway, then it don't feel good no more. So I don't like to go into them, because it means I'm going to have to change. Because, you know, it's something in your gut telling you you're doing wrong, but there's something about it that you like. You know, and what I found out about working the steps is that, well, you know, what I really like about the steps is that it doesn't allow you to feel bad and look bad at the same time. It really don't. The steps will not allow you to feel bad and look bad at the same time. Because they told me early on that if you allow feel bad and look bad to get together and become married, you will do bad. Those things produce do bad. And the step work that I like the most is the first step. It's my favorite step. I'm married to it. Hopefully for life. It helps me to stay clean, you know, one day at a time. I have a sponsor, right, and my sponsor doesn't impose step work on me like Marcy's does. You know, he simply tell me that when I'm doing some things, and he'll pull me up, and then he'll let me go, and he tell me this. He says, when you get tired of doing what you're doing, you will be ready, open, and willing to change. And that's kind of like how I've gotten into the steps. For the first 4 years, the steps wasn't really important to me. I'll repeat again. Just not using. I wanted a $100,000 car. I wanted a $500,000 home. I wanted all my jewelry back. And not using got me all that back. But when the note came, when the bill came, to keep this gift, you must work the steps. Because you will find that things will start to leave as if there's a crackhead in the house. You can't keep the relationship. You can't manage the credit cards. I can't manage my family life. At this point in my life, I'm a grandfather, right? And I don't like it. Not because of the responsibility, but because I think that I'm too young to be a grandfather. I just started living, right? And now I gotta act old. And see, I have to do a step with that. And one of the things I heard Marcy say about sponsorship is that neither did I sponsor anyone. Excuse me. The first 4 years. I don't like sponsoring people. I'm hard enough to sponsor. Y'all don't get that, do you? I try to sponsor myself. But what happened is I had ran into a guy at a convention 2 years ago. And he said to me, he said, "Can you be my sponsor? I've been watching you," right? And I said, "I can be your temporary sponsor," right? And the reason I really didn't want to be is because I didn't feel that I had enough book experience, right? I hadn't read enough, studied, you know. Those people use too. But what happened was is that I accepted the temporary position, and this guy kept coming to me every day with a question. What do they mean by sit still? Somebody told me I was supposed to be on the fourth step. I ended up going to the literature shop, buying me a nice little library, and he put, see, that's how God worked. I wasn't studying fast enough. You know what I mean? I was procrastinating. And what happened was he put the guy in my life, and the guy asked so many questions until I could not lie to him. I had to go seek the answer, right? Because you know how your pride kicking in, and you don't want to tell nobody else to go talk to somebody else's sponsor about this. You're supposed to be sponsoring the guy, and you're talking about, go talk to that sponsor. You know, so he made me work through that means of, that's how I got into the steps, one of the ways. And since being into the steps, I've found a newfound freedom. And what I'm talking about is I have some inner peace, right? Because I have a disease that does this to me. It says, you know, I can be sitting home watching the good giant stream TV with 200 or 300 channels. And the disease will tap on my shoulder and say, boy, you know, a hit of crack show would go nice with this. I mean, one hit would go nice with this. Ain't nothing wrong. And that's when I turn the TV off. You know, I might leave the door open getting out of there to a meeting. Because I think meetings have saved my life in this fellowship. I think meetings are the most important outlet that we have to one another. I think that in order for me not to forget where I come from, I must hear other people share. Because I've found out some things about myself from going to meetings that I forgot about. Oh, I had buried so deep. Only a step could bring them out. Picking on steps, right? But I think that...
You got plenty of time.
I got plenty of time. Yeah, like I want plenty of time. Well, let me say this, that I found that newfound freedom in steps that I was unable to get at Nordstrom, Saks, or any of those places. You can't order it over the internet. The steps have led me back to another place that I went to at first to try to get some help. You know, the guy that dipped me in the water is now my pastor, and it's working. You see what I'm saying? It's amazing how I had to. He told me, he said, he told me I was telling him about the program. He said, yeah, if you would have got the first 10 right, you wouldn't have to do those 12. Yeah. And I said, well, some of us have to go the scenic route. That's the route I'm on. The scenic route, but it's led me back there. It's led me to have a relationship. I was like, I guess my mother's favorite child because I'm the one that wouldn't leave home. You know what I'm saying? So that made us have a relationship closer than the other three that left. I'm also the guy that, you know, when I share this, I want you to understand I'm also the person that would take and steal from my mother and then turn around and help her look for it. I'm also the guy that would take a $10 book of food stamps and go from store to store, buying a box of Red Hots, trying to get back 90-cent change so that I could get, you know, then would turn around and take the change and have to go get dollars for it. Then go cop. That's a lot of work. I have bought a car easier than trying to cop a 50 with no money. I have. It's easier to buy a car than it is to try to cop a 50 with no money in Narcotics Anonymous. The program is such a great thing. I just can't say enough for it, what it's done for me and my family and the friends that it's brought into my life. I mean, if there's someone new in here that don't think that this thing worked, then just come back tomorrow. It'd probably be more people than today. The thing is growing. I like it. The fellowship is all over the world. I'm a world traveler. I was out on a cruise about 2 years ago, and they had what they call, I forget what they called it, but anyway, you couldn't, they didn't dock that day. It was like you stayed at sea. So that day, all drinks was free, the casino was free, cigarettes was free, and I said, boy, I can't even go downstairs. And what I did was I happened to look at the itinerary, and it happened to say N.A. meeting. Now I'm in the West Indies, right? My equilibrium is off. I'm talking about when you come out on a ship and you don't see no land. You know, all you see is the sun, the sky, and water. You know, that's what you're working with, right? And it was some people from New York on the ship, and we had a meeting. I've also been in the Keys in Florida and went to a NA meeting where there was I was the only black person, and I raised my hand and said I was from D.C. And after the meeting, I ended up having lunch on a yacht somewhere in the Florida Keys because one of the people in the fellowship had a yacht and invited me out because I was new and told them who I were. I was an addict. I'm just trying to say that we don't have to waste our time nurturing the past because our futures are very bright. And the steps will help you find those things that you always, or has helped me find the things that I've always been looking for. I used to look for things like some joy. And I didn't realize that joy is a biblical term. Joy only comes depending on the company that you're in. Otherwise, you only get joy when you're in God's company. You know, peace is not store-bought. Want to know why I know? I've changed cars and clothes and furniture numerous of times trying to find some peace with it. It's something about the chair ain't sitting in the right place. The drapes ain't, you know, they ain't falling right. You know. And this is that good stuff that I thought. I find myself more comfortable in one of these chairs in a meeting than I do in a Louis the 15th on a Persian rug. You know, and that's about as plain as I can make it. I really find myself getting humble. I got to go back to D.C., and I've been up here. See, I'm going to have to do some step work when I get back. I'm going to tell you why. I came up here last night. Some guys I seen at 3 o'clock yesterday before I got here didn't speak to me at all in D.C. Get up here, they hug me like I'm, you know, like they love me. Now I got to go back to D.C. tomorrow, and they're not going to hug me back in D.C. Y'all help me. What step do I need to work on to get that off me? Step one? Okay, thank you. Thank you. Five more minutes. The thing that I like, too, about the steps is the one, I like 8 and 9, right? And let me tell you the kind of guy I am. I can take the 9th step. And see, I'm the part of the title out there that says nuts not using the steps. I'm nuts, right? I'm that part. What I would do is take and adjust it and make it fit something and justify that it's right. You know, like lying and then say, I'm not going to tell this because it would injure them or others. You know. The 8th step, like not making an amends because I borrowed that $20 when I was using. I'm clean now. You know, the youngins told me when I came into treatment, they say, I had to owe them some money. So I went back, and you know how we get to looking good after about 6 months. We go back to the old neighborhood, and they pulled up on me, and they said, and I seen two of them that I owe, and I started trembling. They say, whatever you're doing, as long as you continue to do that, you don't owe us. But if you come back out here, the interest rate is 100%. So I'm not just staying because I just really want to. I mean, it's a whole lot of other things, too, that's helping me stay here, right? And I don't think for real that I ever, I haven't never been able to say that I'm ready to, entirely ready to remove God, you know, to have him to remove everything from me. It's some things that's wrong about me that I like. Yeah, I like them. And it ain't causing me no pain right now. But I've been to enough meetings and hit enough people that it caused pain to realize that I don't have to go through the pain to change it. I'm in a good position to change, and that's what I'm working on today. I'm changing some things that don't set right in the world. It ain't easy. Usually things that I change have claw marks, welds on them, bars. You know, I don't let go of things like, you know, just here, you can have that. I like to hold on to the last breath. and that's not good. I think I'm running out of time, and I hope that today that I've been able to help at least several people. But if you're new in here, I would give you the same formula that was gave to me. It was suggested to me that I don't use was first, and they told me find God, get a sponsor, go to meetings, and help the dummy. Because I was definitely the dummy. I was a new dummy then, and I'm getting to be an old dummy, right? And that's what happens when you don't practice the steps. You don't get smarter, you get dumber. Because, you know, anytime somebody do the same thing, know the results, but do it anyway, expecting something different. That's dumb. And Marcy alluded to it. She said, if I smoke some crack, everything must go. And that's how I feel. Thanks for letting me share.
Well, neither one of my speakers spoke long enough. We still have a little, almost 10 minutes left in the meeting. Yes, we do.
We do?
Yes. This meeting is over until 4:15.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. So before we open the meeting up to those who would like to share, please